Welcome to another podcast for Kansas Policy Institute. I'm Paul Sutar, your host. Today, we're speaking with David Dorsey, Senior Education Policy Fellow with the Kansas Policy Institute. Hello, David.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing?
Well, just great. Hey, we're on one of my favorite subjects, quality journalism. Maybe it's this episode ought to be called Mythbusters. We're going to talk about an article from the Washington Post a couple of weeks ago that was talking about this awful, horrible, terrible exodus of teachers from Kansas and just what a terrible, horrible, rotten thing this is and how it's being picked up around the country. So tell me a little bit about this.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. I'll try to go through this without getting too emotional about it or too excited about it. But it's getting very frustrating seeing all the articles that are popping up about this supposed the myth of all the teachers leaving Kansas. And I guess the first thing that I'd like to say about it is, in general, what we're reading and picking up on is that there's a teacher shortage pretty much across the country. So that's kind of the first, you know, if you're talking about myth busters, that's kind of the first thing to bust is that there's not, whatever's going on in Kansas in terms of teachers leaving the profession or retiring is not unique to Kansas or having districts having trouble filling slots. Pretty much every place from, except for New York, seems to be having some kind of level. So I think what this comes back to, and I kind of call this the taproot. I mean, it's sort of pig pile on Kansas time now. And what seems to be going on is that this is just sort of an extension of the concern over the income tax cuts that were made in 2012. If you start to trace stuff back, that seems to be where the issue is. And the journalists, if you want to call them that, are... And I guess particularly the blogosphere has picked up on that, and they're starting to connect dots, and they see there's an income tax cut, therefore state revenues are down, therefore education funding is down, therefore teachers are leaving Kansas. So
yeah, except a lot of those therefores don't follow.
Well, they don't. No, that's what I mean. You know, imagine. You know, I thought about this on the way down today when I was teaching, especially like kindergarten kids. One of the ways we got them to learn their numbers was to play connect the dots. And I could tell right away whether they understood their numbers by how they were connecting the dots. And the kids who didn't understand their numbers are connecting the dots kind of the way these journalists are connecting the dots. It just doesn't make any sense.
I want to draw a peacock, so I'm going to make one go to four.
Exactly. I want it to look like this. So that's really what is sort of driving this debate right now. And so... there are just so many little oddities that are going on in Kansas. And one other thing to add to that, in 2014, the state legislature passed a law that no longer required school districts to have the same job protection as they had before. And that has been interpreted as teachers being stripped of tenure. Simply not true. The school districts are allowed to put that in their negotiated agreements, and we're finding out two things. One of them is that many districts are doing just that. And the second thing is we can't find any indication of any teacher who would otherwise have been tenured who was fired under this new law. So this is all being overblown. And personally, I think it's an outcropping of the whole tax cut and the pick on Kansas, especially Governor Brownback. I mean, he seems to be a real target, and the state legislature too.
So. Well, and I know that it's a moving the goalpost kind of thing for me, because I can remember when I was reporting on education in Kansas back in 2010, Deputy Commissioner Dale Dennis was asked by, and I think it was by one of the Wichita board members, Mr. Dennis, well, when you have to make these cuts, because this was about the cuts that Parkinson made, the actual cuts to mm-hmm. education funding, the board members asked, well, when we have to make cuts, when a district has to make cuts, can we cut the bad teachers and keep the new ones? And Dale Dennis said, well, actually, no, because the union rules and tenure require that you have to start from the newest and go to the oldest.
Right. It was that sort of that what is it? Last hired, first fired.
Right. And so that's something they were complaining about before, but now that it fits a different agenda, now they're talking about it exactly the opposite. It's very frustrating.
Right. It is, but it's the same old trick, and it kind of brings us to this thing that I found in the Washington Post, of all things. And you know, another just kind of a bit of a side issue. It's amazing how many people who probably can't find Kansas on a map are so concerned about the plight of the teachers in this state. And I know that is just, that's not sincere. So that's what made me start to think, okay, where did this all come from? And if you trace it back, I think it comes back to the whole idea that the legislature had the nerve to cut income taxes. And then you get this false narrative that education funding has been cut.
You couldn't be implying that this is possibly where the children are being used for the sake of an agenda, for a narrative, for optics. And you actually went through point by point and talked about the issues in this article. Yeah. So let's hit some of them. First, okay. One of my favorites is just the concept that this is low pay.
Well, right. And the author of this article, someone named Valerie Strauss, I don't even know where she got some of her numbers, because she incorrectly states the average teacher salary, and she didn't even use the latest data from NCES, National Center for Education Statistics. She seems to think we were lower than only seven other states, which is not true. She didn't use the right year. And it's not a huge sticking point, but I think when it ever comes to low pay, someone who's not been in as a teacher, this isn't about pay. It really, I mean, you don't get into teaching for the pay. You understand when you go in what it's going to be like. And I know that, many teachers I've known who've come and gone from education, that the money isn't the issue. And certainly, in my blog, the implication is Missouri pays a lot more. So Kansas teachers are flocking to Missouri. And as it turns out, Missouri pays $108 a year on the average more than Kansas. And that's not even a good figure to use, because that varies from district to district and how many years you've taught and what your education is. There's so many factors in there. That's just a poor indicator. So,
are these numbers adjusted for cost of living, the ones that she's using, or are they just raw numbers?
The NCES stuff is just raw numbers. So they just add them up and divide them.
They pay teachers in California and New York and Connecticut more than they do in Kansas. Shocker, folks. Hold the phone. Imagine that. You get paid more to live in a place where a home's going to cost you $500,000 than a place where a good home will cost you $150,000.
Yep, that's true. And yeah, so there's no controlling for that. They just accumulate all the data and then figure an average. So that's not a good one.
That's crazy. Okay, so let's go on the next point you have here is about job protection. Tell me about that. Now, that goes back to a change that wasn't made this year. That was last year, wasn't it?
Right, and I think if I just take it one step farther back, this is all the articles are based on a number that I can get to in a minute, I guess, but it's this number that there have been 3,720 teachers who left Kansas, whether it's teaching the profession, leaving the state, or retiring. And that number is not given any kind of context other than it's supposed to be a big jump from 3 years ago. However, in the blog that I put together, I showed that, most of that increase happened 2 years ago before any of these other things took place. So yes, if you look at it as a snapshot comparing 2014, 2015 to 2010-11, yeah, that's a 70% increase, but most of that happened in 2011, 2012. So what they're doing, again, like I said, the connect the dots thing, they're not connecting the dots the right way. So that is, so they're using that, all of these things like job protection that I'll talk about here in a second, as explaining this incredibly large number of teachers who are leaving Kansas, which is not incredibly large anyway, but they don't give that number in context other than, gee, that sounds like a lot, therefore there must be problems there. But in particular, the job protection piece, in 2014, the legislature passed a law that claimed that no longer were school districts forced to abide by the old, for lack of a better term, job protection rules. However, they were allowed to put them in their negotiated agreements at the district level, and we're finding out most of them did. But I think what's even more disconcerting is that, at least for these opponents, is that they don't put this in there. We couldn't find evidence of teachers being fired pursuant to this new law. Like the school boards weren't going in willy-nilly, grabbing teachers saying, I don't like you, I'm firing you because I don't have to give you due process anymore. That's just not happening. But they like to do, you know, again, that's a connect the dots thing. This job protection has been stripped, therefore all these teachers are getting fired. Or if they're not getting fired, teachers are getting scared into leaving Kansas.
Well, in fact, we were talking about this a little bit just before we started the podcast. A number of districts, many districts, actually bought out teachers who were close to retirement over the last few years.
Yeah, yes, that is true. I was in the district I taught in Topeka 501. Their response to the recession, when the recession hit, was they looked at the number of teachers who were eligible for retirement, and they offered them a buyout package. I mean, and I don't blame them for it. I would have probably done the same thing, because the teachers who are ready for retirement, most of them are at the higher end of the salary scale. So they gave them a bonus, and I think it was $20,000 or $25,000, if I'm not mistaken, to go away, essentially, and take your retirement and go somewhere else. And they would either hire rookie teachers who are much less expensive, or they would just leave the position unfilled. So a lot of that has to do with just a response to the recession.
Kind of makes me wonder why, you know, if somebody's going to write a slanted article like the Post did, why not write a slanted article that says schools cut their own throat by giving early retirement to experienced teachers?
I don't have an answer to why they would do that. I guess it just, if it doesn't fit the narrative, then they don't put it in there. I guess right. That's the best way to put
right.
it.
I think that's exactly the
yeah.
point.
I wrote a blog earlier this spring toward the end of school, particularly on this subject, and the press was picking up that a lot of schools were closing early in Kansas. Well, they were, but they were closing early because we had such a mild winter, we didn't need to use the snow days that are built into the schedule. So schools were closing. In fact, one superintendent in one of the small districts said, well, we did this on purpose because we wanted to give the teachers an extra week off because we can't always offer them a lot of other stuff. So it was like an extra week off for teachers instead of this concern over not having enough money. I mean, it's a convenient thing to say, but, you know, and having been a teacher, we went through this many years too when we'd have a mild winter. Well, what about the snow days? Well, sometimes the district would give them to you, and sometimes they wouldn't. It's all related to the schedule, not to the snow days. It had nothing to do with money, but they don't put that in there.
Of course not. So it's counter to the narrative.
Right. Right.
How about the issue of hiring unlicensed teachers? That seems to be another one that's gotten ramped up lately. That, oh no, the schools are going to hire these okay. unlicensed, terrible, horrible teachers who are going to ruin your child.
Yes, I could literally sit here for hours and talk about this whole thing about hiring unlicensed teachers. But just try to put it in the condensed version. There are six districts out there that are considered innovative school districts by state law. State law a couple of years ago allowed them to be innovative, which is a whole other story. So, but just suffice it to say, these six districts can go off and do some things that other districts don't have to do. Well, they decided that, and some of the districts have shortages too, particularly in the traditional science, technology, engineering, math, the ones they call STEM. Special education is becoming a problem. So they went to the State Board of Education to get their permission to hire unlicensed teachers. Now, not getting too far afield here, but the fact that they had to go to the state board means that the law that allowed them to be innovative was flawed to start with. So they should not have even had to do this. If they're an innovative district, if they want to hire an unlicensed teacher, they should be able to do that, right? I mean, that's the whole concept of being innovative.
Sure, that makes sense.
But they went through this 3-month-long process through the board meeting every month. They had to go before the board for 3 consecutive months. And these are very traditional, you know, and I call traditional school districts in Kansas. These are the ones that otherwise probably would have been complaining about this. But since they consider themselves innovative, they're looking for a solution.
Right.
That's what this is all about. Well, it took them 3 months to get the state board to say yes. The state board, the 10-member board, voted 6-4 to allow them to hire unlicensed teachers. And they all got up and said, we're only going to do this in very, very limited, because they don't want to hire unlicensed teachers either. I mean, I attended a couple of those meetings. I heard teachers come up and other people in education complaining that this is the death knell of public education. This is going to be it. This is Armageddon is going to happen if this is allowed. So finally, when the vote came down, it was originally a 5-5 split. It was going to fail. The board was not going to allow these teachers to do it. However, one board member changed her mind under the condition that if one of these districts decides to hire an unlicensed teacher, they first have to go before the state board to get their approval. Now, think about that for a second. I mean, at what point, if you're a school district in Kansas, if you're Concordia is one of them, Blue Valley is one of them, there are six altogether. If you're to that point, you have to trot down to Topeka to a state board meeting.
Right.
And Lord knows what would be going on. I mean, would it turn into a circus? I mean, would this be done in public? Would it be done in private in like an executive session with hiring? Right. So who's going to do this? Now the amazing thing about this is, why? And even if that were true, why would that cause a teacher somewhere else to leave Kansas? You know, and I put it as a kind of a fake dialogue at the end of my blog about, you know, I heard, you know, one of the teachers saying, I heard that Concordia is hiring an unlicensed shop teacher, and the immediate response from the other teacher is, oh, I'm leaving Kansas then. I mean, but that's one of the things they're using. So I couldn't understand how did you come to that conclusion that this hiring unlicensed teachers would cause others to leave the state? I mean, so again, it's another stretch. It's another, oh, look what they're doing in Kansas.
Yeah, more convenient dots.
It is, yes. This picture is starting to look very, very twisted at this point, very convoluted.
Oh, it's amazing. Another one of those dots that this is just a convenient way to beat up on something completely irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about these numbers that you mentioned earlier about teachers exiting the state, major reasons for leaving, and how those numbers really, when you look at the truth behind the numbers.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I said before, there's this magic number, 3,720. And first of all, I mean, being a research analyst, I mean, that I am, what context does that number mean? It doesn't mean anything. It's like when you stay a night at a motel and you get 3,000 points. Like, what does that mean? If you don't put it in a context, you have no idea. So they like to throw that number as if it's a big deal. So I went back to, the other part of it is it's supposed to be this huge jump from 3 years ago. And in fact, it is a big jump from 3 years ago. But what they didn't put in is that most of the big jump happened 2 years ago, not as a result of the 2014 law of supposedly stripping job tenure, not because of what they've been calling funding cuts. None of those reasons. It all happened. And I don't really have an explanation why they jumped so much in 2012, 2013, other than retirement went up quite a bit. And trying to analyze teacher retirement numbers is very difficult because it's very nuanced and people have lots of reasons for retiring, a lot of different age levels where people can retire in under education. So I don't see that as a concern. So when you really drill down into the numbers and see what's going on, it's not that big a deal from what they're trying to tie it to. In other words, you know, it is, for lack of a better way to say it, it just is what it is. But when you think about it in terms of, you know, Kansas has 44,000 licensed teachers and 3,700 left for some reason. And if you take the retirement out, they're talking about 1,400 teachers left, either left the state or left the profession. And we've been working with some other people in part of our state policy network who've come up with some numbers, and Kansas isn't out anywhere near an outlier. I mean, all states, I mean, it's, you know, and I guess to me, is it unreasonable to think that if you got 44,000 licensed teachers, that 654 of them left the state? Right. I mean, especially when you consider that in Kansas, a huge number of people live right on another state's border, and that's up in Johnson County. And there's also a lot of people down here in Wichita that live close to another. So most of our population is close to other states anyway. So I think that's a bit of a quirk too. Or that 740 people left the profession. But what I did go back and look at, what the reports didn't put in, is how many teachers actually came back to Kansas to teach. So there were quite a few. I mean, it doesn't quite balance out completely, but if you put that in perspective, in context, if you didn't see anything else, you look at these numbers and go,
you come up with the conclusion the Washington Post wanted you to come up with.
Right.
My goodness.
We'll start with a conclusion, and then let's go find some
supporting evidence. Evidence. Right. I found the same thing. You mentioned, if you look at the number of people who moved out of state as a reason for not being a Kansas teacher anymore. Mm-hmm. Well, what about the number who moved into Kansas from other states?
Right.
You know, the Kansas-Missouri border is very porous, and people jump back and forth all the time.
Yes. Yes.
So to me, it's very disingenuous that they look at it that way. Plus, like I said before, baby boomers retiring, school administrators for several years have been anticipating this growing trend of teachers retiring. Now, schools have started packing on more and more employees over the last couple of decades. Well, after a couple of decades working somewhere, guess what happens? They retire.
And education has fallen into that problem, and that's really a global problem. And one of the things that seems to be uniform across the country is that fewer and fewer teachers are entering teacher prep programs to become teachers in the first place. So that number is dwindling, and naturally, if that number dwindles, then the number of new teachers coming in is going to be low. And then you've got the number of baby boomers are getting ready to retire, and to me, it's a natural phenomenon that this happens. To me, it would be unnatural as if it weren't happening that you were having nationwide teacher shortages. So it's, how do you address those? That's kind of the next step. People's decision at the college age to go into teaching, because it's become tougher. I mean, you see news stories. I mean, this doesn't help any when you see stuff like this. When someone's making the decision, do I want to become a teacher or not? And you read garbage like this, and you go, "Well, maybe I shouldn't become one." At some point, there has to be a tipping point where, out of necessity. I mean, you mentioned the Wichita district going to the Philippines. Well, that also happened in 501 when I taught there. I don't know if they all went together, but a bunch of them went over to the Philippines to get people to come over. And I don't even know what the attrition rate was up there, but that's. I don't think that's necessarily an isolated incident. I think it's just one incident, sort of a long spectrum of what are we going to do? And I feel particularly sorry for the rural districts, because a lot of the small districts, teacher retires, there's nobody in town to fill it, and they can't get anybody to move out there, and they're even strapped for paying them because of the pay structure that is union driven again. The districts don't have the flexibility to pay somebody more money to come out there. So it's a very, when it's very controlled like this, you're going to have, a controlled economy doesn't work.
No.
Whether it's at a macro or a micro level, it doesn't.
No, absolutely true. And that brings up another point about these supposed continuing cuts to education funding. That to me is one of the most disingenuous things that's stated.
It is. It's From my perspective, it's almost getting old talking about it, because we've just shown over and over and over again that there aren't cuts to education. Their interpretation is, if I don't get as much as I wanted, then I got cut.
Right. It's sort of like me saying I want a 100% pay raise from my boss, and I get a 25% pay raise instead. And then I go out and I say, well, I got a 75% cut.
Exactly. And that's what they're selling it on, is that there's these cuts, and it just isn't true. But when you've got a media that's supporting you, whatever you say seems to be the gospel, and they also a lot of districts use that to go to their voters to get more local money. Some succeeded, some didn't, but if you just keep beating that drum, repeating that mantra, we got cut,
right.
we got cut, it gets, it permeates into the consciousness, and you go, well, yeah, I guess they did, but no, they really haven't. We've shown that over and over again. Per pupil spending is at record amounts. Overall funding is at record amounts. I don't even know what else to say at this point about it.
It's terrible. Tell me a little bit about this Kermudgeducation blog.
Well, I guess anybody with a computer and an internet connection now as a journalist. And there is this quirky old guy out of, and when I wrote this, I really don't know where he's from because it's hard to tell from his blog, but he's a veteran teacher. I'm not even sure if he still teaches, but he's got this site called Kermuducation, and he acts like he's the grumpy old man. And I made the comparison to Walter Matthau in Grumpy Old Men, like, you know, kind of picture him, you know, sitting there and complaining about a lot of stuff. And it's, and as I said, it's, you know, it's kind of folksy, it's kind of cute, it's kind of down homey, but it's not authoritative. And to your point about, you know, the state of journalism and sort of my opening line about how I'm appalled at what passes for, I mean, you got somebody from the Washington Post, which is supposed to be, you know, a well-respected news organization, they're quoting something from some guy who's sitting in his house just spewing stuff as journalism. And that's really, you know, that's a concern. That, and that, I mean, that's why you have to do stuff like this. We have to bring it back to what's real, to the facts of the case, not just picking up what somebody in the blogosphere is throwing out there and treat it as if it's gospel. And, you know, and I would just think that if you're working for the Washington Post, you should sort of know this stuff, shouldn't you?
If they all live in the same neighborhoods, have the same friends, have the same political perspective, they're just not going to check the facts. They're just going to check to make sure that it agrees with what they think they know. Thank you, David, for writing this excellent piece. Thank you for staying on top of this issue for the people of Kansas. I would encourage anyone who wants to read the original piece and go to kansaspolicy.org, click on the blogs link, and you'll pretty quickly find David's piece on this and many, many more excellent and well-sourced articles from Kansas Policy Institute. Thank you, David. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you.